I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hello, I'm Simon Morris. One of the appealing things about a popular movie franchise, I suppose, is being part of a group. Everyone's there because they're familiar with the brand, the characters, and often pretty much everything that's about to happen. That certainly explains the seemingly unquenchable optimism for all those Star Wars films, not to mention James Bond, Marvel Comics, Sex and the City, and less affair like the upcoming Kung Fu Panda 4.
Inner peace.
Keep your surf off my turf!
Dinner, please. Dinner with peas in a sesame soy glaze.
This is not working at all.
They're faith-based, in other words, meaning no matter how often these audiences have been disappointed in the past, they keep coming back for more. This time, they think, this time the franchise won't let me down. Why else do we plod through all those sequels and prequels to old favourites like Lord of the Rings or the Game of Thrones TV series?
I like visitors as much as the next Hobbit. But I do like to know them before they come. Visiting.
Mr. Baggins?
At your service.
I'm surrounded by dwarves. What are they doing here?
Oh, they're quite a merry gathering.
But that's hardly the case with a franchise you have no or next to no emotional commitment to. For example, the Ghostbusters films, which I remember being mildly amused by back in the 80s, mostly on the strength of the then popularity of Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
Real wrath of God type stuff.
Zach.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
Since then, not so much. Certainly not enough to be particularly offended by the mostly all-women reimagining of Ghostbusters a few years ago, or to muster any interest at all in the more official reboot from original director Ivan Reitman and his son Jason. But there are any amount of people who can't wait to see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, I'm told.
Welcome to the new Paranormal Research Center.
You just let ghosts hang out in here?
We've spent 40 years trapping them. Now we can study them.
He's cute.
Yeah.
As I say, it's a matter of faith. And a movie called Immaculate seemed more traditionally faith-based when it crossed my path this week. Not only does it feature Cecilia, a woman of devout faith, but Cecilia is played by a current craze, actress Sydney Sweeney. However, it turns out Immaculate is a different kind of popular genre.
Hello?
Now, I'm not much of a horror fan at the best of times, but at least this one seemed more the psychological, semi-plausible type, rather than the ghost-busting, built on the site of an ancient Indian burial ground variety. Small mercies, I suppose. Often, reviving old favourites runs the risk of audience expectations being too high. Well, that wasn't my experience when, in a slow week at the cinema, I found myself trawling the streaming services, where I found a remake of a film called Roadhouse.
Tell me about this bouncer.
Yeah, it's all nice, like he's Mr. Rogers or something, but then he'll haul off.
Really interesting guy, overall.
The publicity for Roadhouse implies that the original, Patrick Swayze gets a job as a honky-tonk bouncer, was a fondly remembered classic. Well, not by me. I might have seen it, or I could be thinking of 50 other straight-to-video thrillers.
This is my town.
I'm not afraid of him.
I guess you'll be having that fire sale now, all right?
You got your hands full, kid.
What I can say is that while some people are up in arms about Jake Gyllenhaal's remake on Prime Video, my only concern was staying awake all the way through. Surely that won't be the case in the thrills, spills, laughs and well-loved characters promised by Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
We've all had experiences and encounters with the unknown and the unexplainable. Here, we pay top dollar for your possessed possessions.
I was rather surprised at the apparent enthusiasm for the latest Ghostbusters worldwide, though particularly in America. Perhaps I should say particularly in New York, which is where all but the last film was set. When the iconic Ghostbusters car, according to my notes, was seen careering around the Big Apple, New Yorkers went nuts, apparently.
It's the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon.
Hold on your ass!
Adding to the excitement was the fact that the new, younger cast members of the last Ghostbusters epic were going to be joined by the old ones, or as we say these days, the legacy cast. Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and the ghost of Harold Ramis appeared briefly in cameo roles in Ghostbusters Afterlife, but now they're back for good in Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
They called themselves Ghostbusters. According to these hacks, they saved the world. No eyewitnesses. And who is found to carry the torch? Descendants of Egon Spengler.
Is for good the phrase I'm looking for? Anyway, along the way they're joined by other old cast members hauled out of retirement, like William Atherton playing Pompous Idiot again, and Annie Potts, who apparently played the Buster's receptionist Melnitz back in the day. If you say so.
If there's something strange, if there's something weird, who are people going to call?
Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Nominally front and centre, though, are Egon Spengler's daughter Callie and her two young teens, Phoebe and Trevor. The Spenglers are carrying on the family business back in New York, along with Carrie's doofus fiancé, Gary Gruberson. Paul Rudd at his most Paul Rudd.
I have a ghost to bust.
All right, that was cool.
Gary, come on.
No, I know, I'm sorry. It's just the way she said it. It sounded cool.
But while the Spenglers are chasing things like the Hell's Kitchen sewer dragon, there's something strange in the neighbourhood. Former Ghostbuster Ray Stantz, Dan Aykroyd, is running a paranormal junk shop. And one day, he's offered a mysterious orb.
You the weird guy who buys strange old things?
Correct on both counts.
Buddy, you just hit the jackpot.
What is it?
Better question is, what's inside of it?
What's in the orb? Ray shows it to the current Ghostbusters and their landlord, the Paranormal Research Centre. Among the researchers is English comedian James Acaster, who, like Bill Murray before him, adds some unpredictability to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Ever since you brought in this orb, strange things have been occurring. You think it's commanding the spirits?
Is something trying to get out?
Many things.
It transpires that there's a big, scary ghost inside the orb, as opposed to the cute, green, slimy ones they've been tackling up to now. It's a ghost that promises to supply chills on top of the usual thrills and spills. Look out, New York, there's a cold front planning to freeze the entire city.
The parables tell of an unimaginable evil commanding an army of ghosts. With the power to kill by fear itself.
Like, literally scared to death?
As I say, this is a promise that depends on some pre-existing audience enthusiasm for Ghostbusters. Will Sigourney Weaver return? Will that gigantic marshmallow snowman stride down Broadway again? And most important, will the now famously prickly Bill Murray get back into the suit?
We're gonna need all the help we can get.
Let's get to work.
Can I be of any help?
Melnitz in uniform! Yeah!
Well, the answer to the last question is easy. Yes, Bill's back as Peter Venkman, though he's now a sentimental guest appearance rather than the comedy act of God he used to be. Certainly the film looks enormous and expensive, But the trouble is, everything looks enormous and expensive these days. Is that the same as entertaining, I wonder?
We're the Ghostbusters. Can I tell you something else?
What?
Buster makes me feel good.
It makes me feel good.
Apparently, I'm not the only one wondering. Among my audience of aging nostalgia freaks for Ghostbusters Frozen Empire were a couple of 12-year-old boys, the sort of kids who flocked to the original all those years ago. They clearly wanted to like it, and to their credit, they lasted the distance.
Heads up. It's all dark and horny at 12 o'clock.
But as Frozen Empire plodded on, I could hear the telltale sounds of a film that had ceased to grip. Two 12-year-old boys chatting among themselves about something else. As for me, I enjoyed James Acaster, Patton Oswalt, and even Bill Murray at times. But would I have enjoyed them more in something else? Absolutely. Her name's Sydney Sweeney, and she's currently just about the hottest new thing among teens, particularly teenage boys, I believe. The best comparison I can make is with early Scarlett Johansson. Remember Scarlet Fever back in the days of Lost in Translation with Bill Murray.
Maybe we should just tell everyone we're together.
What?
It would solve that problem for me, and you clearly want Margaret.
She sees her with me. She wants what she can't have.
There's no way we can convince anyone we actually like each other.
I remember Sydney Sweeney in Anyone But You, the TV series White Lotus, and the Rolling Stones video Angry. I can't say I remember her in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the TV series Euphoria, or a horror film called Giant Killer Ants. Well, she's back to horror in a film called Immaculate.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Glancing at the poster for Immaculate, I'd assumed it was some sort of faith-based nun story, like the recent Cabrini. A young American nun called Sister Cecilia goes to an Italian convent, searching for meaning in her life.
I know God saved me for a reason, but I guess I'm still searching for what that reason is.
The point is made that Cecilia doesn't speak Italian, unlike the entire supporting cast who barely speak anything else. What's not established is the fact that Sydney Sweeney barely speaks coherent English either. She looks fine, but half the time I struggle to make out what on earth she was saying.
I promise to carry myself with grace because I want nothing more than to belong here. I'm afraid I've already messed things up.
Speak up, Sister Cecilia. Anyway, everything seems to be fine, or it would be if we could forget the opening scene where another nun tried to escape someone or something, and it all ended badly. That sort of thing does tend to put an audience on edge.
Questo bambino è stato concepito senza peccato. Dio è testimone. Abbiamo assistito a un miracolo.
Anywho, even the naive Sister Cecilia starts to notice that something's a little off, so like all good nuns, she pops along to confession. I'm not quite sure what she's expecting, since the cardinal running confession only speaks Italian, when he speaks anything, that is.
I'm sorry for these... Your Eminence?
And then it all kicks off. Cecilia has an occasional blackout, not to mention some sickness in the morning. She finds herself given special attention by the dodgy Mother Superior, the even dodgier doctor, and the dodgiest priest, Father Sal. And before you can say Rosemary's Baby...
Too much blood of Christ.
It's a miracle. You are with child.
Wait, what? With child? How can that be? And for the rest of Immaculate, we should have seen it coming with that title, we creep around the convent in the middle of the night looking for answers. Or, if not answers, then at least avoiding the increasingly rapid number of jump scares.
Oh,
out of all the women in the world.
Why did he choose me?
How can we trust what's inside you?
Well, there's no point expecting much in the way of coherent explanations, what with Sydney mumbling and the rest of the Italian cast learning their lines phonetically, as far as I can tell. So director Michael Moan decides to stress the visuals most of the time. It may not make a lot of sense, but for the first hour or so, it efficiently delivers some unpleasant shocks. I found myself feeling a bit sorry for Sydney going through all this. Whose idea was it, I wondered? Who thought anyone wanted to see something like immaculate? Well, it turns out the answer was Sydney Sweeney herself, who produced the film and, in fact, had been hanging on to it for years, waiting to get it greenlit. The film gets more and more casually violent, though you do find yourself trying to guess the murder weapon of the next gory death.
Suffering. Yes, love.
No way ever.
Rosary beads, a holy relic, a bowl of gruel. And watching Sydney's rather vacantly pretty face, it's hard to imagine her signing off some of these scenes. But for all the brutality, Immaculate hardly offers much in the way of novelty.
Suffering. 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 Yes, love.
I don't know what it is about nuns and horror films, but then neither do the creators of this film. One for people who want a few cheap scares with a side order of a topless Sydney Sweeney covered in blood. Well, now I put it that way, of course. I have no memory at all of an 80s film called Roadhouse, starring then-popular favourite Patrick Swayze. But Swayze made a lot of forgettable movies. I see it was nominated for 6 Razzies, which is never a good sign.
If somebody gets in your face, I want you to be nice.
Don't be rude!
Ask him to walk, but be nice.
Help this gentleman to the door.
Until it's time to not be nice.
The main reasons I decided to check out the remake, showing on Prime Video, were star Jake Gyllenhaal and director Doug Liman. But it's been a while since Liman's last decent movies, Edge of Tomorrow, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and frankly you can say the same about Gyllenhaal too, though he still looks impressive walking into a boxing ring. The gimmick being that Elwood Dalton's reputation is so fearsome that his opponent throws in the towel immediately. It's a living, but not a great one. Our hero spends a lot of time sleeping in his car.
This ain't the Holiday Inn, pal.
I'm moving.
But things are about to look up. Dalton is approached by Frankie. She runs a roadhouse down south. Now, Roadhouse is a bar with a band, apparently, though in Frankie's one, the rowdy roughnecks prefer to make their own fun.
A friend of mine suggested I come talk to you. I own a roadhouse out in the Florida Keys. Lately, it's been attracting the wrong clientele. I can pay you good money. Judging by your car, you need that.
Well, I like my car.
Think about it.
Dalton is hired as a bouncer to throw out troublemakers. He buses down to the Florida Keys Roadhouse, has a coffee, and listens to the band. Actually, the southern bands are just about the only things worth watching in Roadhouse. In come those troublemakers Frankie was talking about, played by people mostly picked for their stunt work rather than their ability to handle tricky dialogue. Though, of course, snappy one-liners are Dalton's stock in trade as he takes on these punks five at a time.
Before we start, do you have insurance?
What?
Your coverage good? Like, you have dental?
Oh, haha.
Is there a hospital nearby? Is it, like, too far?
It's about, like, 25 minutes, I'd say.
I just slapped you. Are you all right?
What?
Dalton then scoops up the remains and takes them to the nearest hospital. What a guy. Which is where he meets Dr. Ellie. The two of them spar in a flirty sort of way as we wait for the plot, such as it is, to kick in.
So you like to fight? You ever win?
No one ever wins a fight.
Someone wants the Roadhouse put out of business, and it's time to bring in the heavy weaponry. Now, I have to confess I'd never heard of Conor McGregor, but only because I don't hang out in MMA or UFC circles. That's mixed martial arts and ultimate fighting championship to us limp-wristed snowflakes. Conor makes another strong entrance, stark naked and beating someone up for their clothes.
Hey, fellas. Looks like you're having a smashing night. Dalton! I got a tip for you. Don't let no one get this close.
Conor McGregor plays Knox, whose mission in life is to get into fight after fight with Dalton, nominally for bad guy Ben Brandt, but not necessarily. Brandt is played by Billy Magnuson, by the way. I know, me neither.
Let me guess, you know, threaten me, tell me to get out of town.
I get the impression that you can't be threatened.
And then there are fights. Lots and lots of fights. Fights in bars, fights out in yards, fights on boats, fights on floats. Impressively, Jake Gyllenhaal does many of his own stunts, risking life and limb against the terrifying Conor McGregor.
Once Knox is on the job, it's over, baby.
It takes a lot to get me angry, but when I am, I just can't let go.
Less impressively, director Doug Liman seems content to let the stunt arranger do most of the job for him in Roadhouse. It ended up playing on Prime Video, and frankly, you can see why.
People seem a little aggressive around here.
Is that one a friend of yours?
No, I just broke his arm.
The faintest praise I can offer this Roadhouse is that it's too dull to warrant a Razzie, unlike its less than illustrious predecessor. Hopefully, once it's had its run on Prime Video, it'll sink without a trace. But of course, I'm noted for my simple faith. I'm Simon Morris, and I hope you'll join me at the movies, same time next week.